This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of lateral epicondylitis, or tennis elbow, from the shoulder and elbow section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Lateral epicondylitis, also known as tennis elbow, is an overuse injury caused by eccentric overload at the origin of the common extensor tendon, leading to tendinosis and inflammation of the ECRB. Diagnosis is made clinically with tenderness over the lateral epicondyle, made worse with resisted wrist extension. Treatment is primarily non-operative with NSAIDs, activity modification, and bracing. Rarely, operative management is indicated for patients with persistent symptoms who fail non-operative management. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, in terms of incidence of lateral epicondylitis, this is the most common cause for elbow symptoms in patients with elbow pain, and affects 1 to 3% of adults annually, and is commonly seen in the dominant arm. As far as demographics, up to 50% of all tennis players develop risk factors, including poor swing technique, a heavy racket, incorrect grip size, and high string tension. This is common in laborers who utilize heavy tools, workers engaged in repetitive gripping or lifting tasks, is most common between the ages of 35 and 50 years old, and know that men and women are equally affected. Moving on to etiology, with respect to pathophysiology, it's important to discuss the mechanism, pathoanatomy, and pathohistology. So in terms of mechanism, the tenodesis effect to optimize grip causes overuse of the ECRB and is precipitated by repetitive wrist extension and forearm pronation, and is common in tennis players where the backhand is implicated. With respect to pathoanatomy, this usually begins as a micro tear of the origin of the ECRB and may also involve micro tears of the ECRL and ECU. With respect to pathohistology, microscopic evaluation of the tissue reveals angiofibroblastic hyperplasia and disorganized collagen. As far as associated conditions with lateral epicondylitis, radial tunnel syndrome is present in 5% of patients. Now let's talk about some relevant anatomy. So with respect to the common extensor origin, muscles that originate from the lateral supracondylar ridge include the extensor carpi radialis longus. Muscles that originate on the lateral epicondyle include the extensor carpi radialis brevis, extensor carpi ulnaris, extensor digitorum, extensor digiti minimi, and the anconeus, which shares the same attachment site as the ECRB. Important ligaments to be aware of include the lateral ulnar collateral ligament. As far as nerves, the posterior interosseous nerve, or PIN, enters the supinator just distal to the radial head. Compression can lead to radial tunnel syndrome, which may coexist with lateral epicondylitis. Moving on to presentation, symptoms of lateral epicondylitis includes pain with resisted wrist extension, pain with gripping activities, and decreased grip strength. On physical exam, palpation and inspection reveals point tenderness at the ECRB insertion into the lateral epicondyle, which is a few millimeters distal to the tip of the lateral epicondyle. In terms of neuromuscular evaluation, patients may have decreased grip strength and know that neurological exam helps to differentiate from entrapment syndromes. With respect to provocative tests, the following maneuvers exacerbate pain at the lateral epicondyle: resisted wrist extension with the elbow fully extended, resisted extension of the long fingers, maximal flexion of the wrist, and passive wrist flexion in pronation causes pain at the elbow. Moving on to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP and a lateral of the elbow. Findings are usually normal, may reveal calcifications in the extensor muscle mass, which is seen in up to 20% of patients, and findings may also reveal signs of previous surgery. MRI is not necessary for diagnosis. However, if obtained, increased signal intensity at the ECRB tendon origin may be seen in up to 50% of cases. This will manifest with thickening, edema, and tendon degeneration. Ultrasonography requires an experienced operator, therefore has variable sensitivity/specificity, however, is the most useful diagnostic tool in an experienced operator's hands. Know that on ultrasound, the ECRB tendon will appear thickened and hypoechoic. As far as other studies, histopathological studies of the ECRB tendon tissue shows fibroblast hypertrophy, disorganized collagen, and vascular hyperplasia. Diagnosis of lateral epicondylitis is primarily based on symptoms and physical exam. The differential diagnosis for lateral epicondylitis includes posterolateral plica, posterolateral rotatory instability, radial tunnel syndrome, which is characterized by maximal tenderness palpated 3 to 4 centimeters distal and anterior to the lateral epicondyle, as well as pain with resisted third finger extension and pain with resisted forearm supination. Other diagnoses on the differential include occult fracture, cervical radiculopathy, capitellar osteochondritis desiccans, triceps tendonitis, radiocapitellar osteoarthritis, and shingles. Moving on to treatment of lateral epicondylitis, this can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes activity modification, ICE, NSAIDs, physical therapy, and ultrasound. This is indicated as the first line of treatment. Techniques include tennis modifications like slower playing surfaces, more flexible rackets, lower string tension, and a larger grip. Other non-operative management techniques include a counterforce brace or strap, steroid injections, however, keep in mind that you should only give up to 3, a physical therapy regimen, acupuncture, iontophoresis/phonophoresis, and extracorporeal shockwave therapy. In terms of outcomes, there is up to a 95% success rate with non-operative treatment, but patience is required. Operative options include release and debridement of the ECRP origin. This is indicated if prolonged non-operative management fails, which is defined as 6 to 12 months. Other indications include a clear diagnosis that is isolated lateral epicondylitis, and it's also indicated in the setting of intra-articular pathology. Contraindications include an inadequate trial of non-surgical treatment and patient non-compliance with the recommended non-surgical treatment. Now, let's talk about the surgical technique of a release and debridement of the ECRP origin in a bit more detail. We'll discuss the open technique and the arthroscopic technique. So the open technique is performed with an incision that is positioned over the common extensor origin. You will then lift the ECRL off the ECRP, which is located deep and posterior to the ECRL. You will then excise degenerative tissue, decorticate the epicondyle, repair the capsule if breached, and then a side-to-side closure of the tendon should be performed. An arthroscopic technique has advantages that include visualization and the ability to address any intra-articular pathology. This approach will involve resecting the lateral capsule anteriorly. However, be sure that you do not pass the mid-radial head to protect the LUCL. You will then release the ECRP from the origin, where the muscle tissue begins, and then decorticate the lateral epicondyle. Now, let's talk about some complications. The ones to know include iatrogenic LUCL injury, missed radial nerve entrapment syndrome, iatrogenic neurovascular injury, heterotopic ossification, infection, and missed concomitant pathology, for example, posterolateral rotatory instability or PLRI, or radial tunnel syndrome. So starting with iatrogenic LUCL injury, this is caused by excessive resection of the LUCL, and remember that you should not extend beyond the equator of the radial head to prevent this complication. Know that iatrogenic LUCL injury may lead to posterolateral rotatory instability or PLRI. Missed radial nerve entrapment syndrome is common in up to 5% of patients with lateral epicondylitis. Iatrogenic neurovascular injury is usually radial nerve injury. Finally, in terms of heterotopic ossification, you can decrease the risk with thorough irrigation following decortication. Now, let's end this review session talking about the prognosis of lateral epicondylitis. Know that non-operative treatment is effective in up to 95% of cases. Factors associated with the increased likelihood of requiring operative management is ipsilateral radial tunnel syndrome, history of prior injection of any kind, and workers' compensation. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. A 46-year-old, otherwise healthy man comes to clinic with 6 months of right elbow pain. It has been non-responsive to NSAIDs. He has pain over the lateral aspect of the elbow. The pain is exacerbated with resisted wrist extension. What is the origin and insertion, respectively, of the muscle most commonly implicated in this disorder? And the choices are 1, lateral supracondylar ridge and the 2nd metacarpal, 2, lateral supracondylar ridge and the 3rd metacarpal, 3, lateral supracondylar ridge and Lister's tubercle, 4, lateral epicondyle and 2nd metacarpal, and 5, lateral epicondyle and 3rd metacarpal. The correct answer to this question is 5, lateral epicondyle and 3rd metacarpal. So the patient is presenting with signs and symptoms consistent with lateral epicondylitis, also known as tennis elbow. The implicated muscle, the extensor carpi radialis brevis, or ECRB, originates on the anterior aspect of the lateral epicondyle and inserts on the 3rd metacarpal. Lateral epicondylitis is an overuse injury that leads to inflammation and tendon degeneration at the insertion of the ECRB. Pathology specimens typically reveal disorganized collagen angiofibroblastic hyperplasia. Conservative treatment consisting of activity modification, ECRB stretching, splinting, and corticosteroid injections is successful in over 95% of cases. Refractory cases require release, debridement, and reattachment of the ECRB origin. Brummel et al. Reviewed the clinical presentation and management of lateral epicondylitis. They make a distinction between the acute symptoms from injury in young athletes and chronic, slowly progressing symptoms in older adults. The mainstay of treatment is conservative. Calfi et al. Review current concepts in the management of lateral epicondylitis. They suggest that the underlying joint capsule and collateral ligament complex may sometimes be implicated in severe disease. New arthroscopic and percutaneous techniques for surgical management have been shown to be effective in low-level studies and case series. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, lateral supracondylar ridge and second metacarpal is incorrect as the extensor carpi radialis longus originates at the lateral supracondylar ridge and inserts on the second metacarpal. Answers 2 through 4 are incorrect as these are all incorrect combination of answers and remember that no muscle inserts on Lister's tubercle. Moving on to the next question. A 47-year-old man comes for evaluation of his dominant right elbow, which has been bothering him with activity for the past 3 months, especially with activities requiring wrist extension. He's an active squash player and has been unable to continue the sport. Examination shows tenderness at the common extensor origin. What is the next best step? And the choices are 1. Platelet-rich plasma injection, 2. Eccentric exercises, 3. Corticosteroid injection, 4. Ultrasonic emulsification / aspiration, and 5. Surgical debridement and repair of the extensor carpi radialis brevis. The correct answer to this question is 2. Eccentric exercises. So the patient has tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis. The first-line treatment is conservative. Lateral epicondylitis is a common problem with numerous non-operative treatments available. There is little scientific evidence to support any of these treatments, however, and the quality of most reports is low and their conclusions limited by bias and/or study design. Tennis elbow often resolves with time regardless of which conservative treatment is chosen. Coombs et al. Randomized patients with unilateral tennis elbow to receive either 1. A corticosteroid injection, 2. Placebo injection, 3. Corticosteroid injection plus physical therapy, or 4. Placebo injection plus physical therapy. They found that corticosteroid resulted in worse clinical outcomes and recurrence rate compared to placebo injection. Use of physical therapy did not produce any significant differences. Dines et al. Reviewed the diagnosis and management of tennis injuries, including lateral epicondylitis. Although they acknowledge that there is no long-term benefit with regard to tendon healing, they note that steroid injection may be useful to control acute symptoms. Boyer et al. Reviewed the myths surrounding lateral epicondylitis. They note that despite widespread use, corticosteroid injection has repeatedly been shown to have no long-term benefit. They conclude, based on the review of the literature, that if there is any benefit to steroid injection, it is of short duration and in patients whose symptoms have been of short duration without any previous treatment. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following structures shares the same origin site as the tendon that undergoes angiofibroblastic hyperplasia during the pathogenesis of tennis elbow? And the choices are 1. Brachioradialis, 2. Anconeus, 3. Annular ligament, 4. Flexor carpi ulnaris, and 5. Palmaris longus. The correct answer to this question is 2. Anconeus. So lateral epicondylitis is classically thought to be caused by histopathologic angiofibroblastic hyperplasia at the origin of the extensor carpi radialis brevis. The ECRB originates from the common extensor wad that also includes the ECRL, extensor digitorum, and extensor carpi ulnaris. The anconeus shares the same attachment site at the lateral epicondyle as the ECRB. The classic level 4 study by Nerschel reviewed 1,213 patients with tennis elbow, of which 88 elbows underwent surgery. Immature fibroblastic and vascular infiltration of the origin of the ECRB was found, excised, and tendon repaired by Nerschel with an improvement rate of 97%. And moving on to the final question. A 50-year-old carpenter has chronic pain over the lateral aspect of the elbow. He notes pain when using a hammer. On exam, he has pain with resisted wrist extension while the elbow is fully extended. Which muscle attachment is likely to be involved? And the choices are 1. Distal biceps brachii, 2. Brachioradialis, 3. Extensor carpi radialis brevis, 4. Extensor carpi radialis longus, and 5. Supinator. the correct answer to this question is 3, extensor carpi radialis brevis. So the clinical presentation is consistent with lateral epicondylitis, which is caused from pathologic changes at the origin of the extensor carpi radialis brevis, or ECRB. Physical exam findings consistent with lateral epicondylitis include tenderness over the lateral epicondyle at the origin of the ECRB and pain that is reproduced with gripping, resisted long finger extension, resisted wrist extension while the elbow is fully extended, and maximum passive wrist flexion. This should be distinguished with pain with resisted supination with the arm and wrist in extension characteristically seen with radial tunnel syndrome. Nerschel et al. Looked at their surgical cohort of patients with lateral epicondylitis that were treated with surgery. They found the lesion that was consistently identified at surgery was immature fibroblastic and vascular infiltration of the origin of the extensor carpi radialis brevis, or ECRB. There was an overall improvement rate of 97.7%, and 85.2% of the patients returned to full activity, including rigorous sports, following surgical treatment. Morris et al. Used indwelling EMG to look at muscle activity about the elbow during tennis strokes in 9 professional and collegiate level players. They concluded the predominant activity of the wrist extensors in all strokes may be one explanation for predisposition to injury. That's all for this review about lateral epicondylitis or tennis elbow. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.